Adam Collinson with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Oh, my gosh.
This is big.
This is a big story, actually. Aetna announced today that it's pulling out of the Obamacare exchanges in 2017. And it's a mess because what has happened here is that the insurance companies and one of the framers of Obamacare himself was just quoted as saying people are sicker than we thought they were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
What?
And there was another quote that was troubling. It said that big national insurers are having trouble making money in the marketplace, so a lot of them are retreating. You've seen Aetna, Humana, and United Healthcare retreat big time nationally. And here in Illinois, we've seen even more fluctuations than that.
All right. To explain it all to us is Dr. Stephen Klasko. And Dr. Klasko is the president and CEO of Philadelphia-based Thomas Jefferson University and Jefferson Health, which is bridging the art and science of medicine and healthcare transformation. And I would say, doctor, that that's what we need right about now.
Transformation. Sounds great.
A bridge and some transformation and some other things. Because the whole idea here, when you have guys who are writing this, and this all started, and I don't want to get too caught in the weeds here, but this basically, this all started 25 years ago, right? I mean, this is when the Clintons were ascending into the White House, and one of their initiatives at that moment was to try to do some kind of nationalized or universal health care, and that didn't work out politically for them. But this had already started to be written back then, right? And now what we ended up with in 2009 was a warmed over version of this that the health insurance companies also helped to write because they were like, well, they didn't want to get screwed by it, right?
You're exactly right. Listen, you said it best. It's a mess. So, you know, I think we could stop there.
Well, thank you for joining us, doctor. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Dr. Klasko.
I hope I was valuable to the discussion. But I predicted this in a book that I wrote about 3 months ago called, it was originally called I Messed Up Healthcare in America, Put Your Name Here, because everybody blames everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It ended up becoming We Can Fix Healthcare. But here's what it comes down to. President Obama decided that good decision or good thought that I want to give access to healthcare to a lot more people. The problem is he gave access to a very inequitable, inefficient system and then hoped that it would change. And the fact is it hasn't changed. So what we're stuck with is a lot more people spending a lot more money without any incentive really yet to change. And if you take a dollar away from the healthcare system, it comes from somebody. So here's what happened. You know, diabetic folks that are eating at McDonald's all got insurance. Healthy folks said, well, I'm going to figure out a way to not have to get into this system. Mm-hmm. And miraculously, the insurers, some of which are like Aetna, which are investor-owned, saying, hey, this isn't such a good deal for us. So that's exactly what's happened. And until you go through the difficult things that have to happen to disrupt the system to provide access for everybody, like what has happened in the United Kingdom and Canada, until you come to that realization, it's going to be worse of a mess and more expensive.
We've heard since the beginning, you've got to get the healthy people into the system. You've got to get them to buy in, millennials, younger people who haven't, who just need, you know, kind of yearly checkups and things like that. Roe was asking earlier what the penalties are, and they're getting to be serious. 2014, it was $95 per adult or 1% of income. That went to $325 per adult, 2% of income in 2015. 2016, it's $700 per adult or 2.5% of income. Are these motivating, or what? Why aren't those people part of the system? Isn't that part of the solution?
Yeah, I don't know if you have any 20-some-year-old, but if you're a 23-year-old that's making $30,000, you're not really worried about that. And my guess is that some of the folks are not necessarily filling out their IRS forms exactly the right way. But the fact is that what's happening to these kids is that the mean salary in this country, Anna, is $56,000. The mean deductible now, if you have insurance, is $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happened is, you know, these kids are all looking for alternatives. And, yeah, as the penalties get worse, it's going to become more of a conundrum for folks. But you never answer things just by having penalties. Every other industry has really changed by disrupting the industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't been willing to really disrupt healthcare. Let me give you an example. In Jefferson, we have one of the largest telehealth entities in the country. We're moving folks out of our expensive, inefficient ER in downtown Philadelphia. That's good, right? The fact is, we're getting killed because you still get paid a lot for having people come to your expensive, inefficient ER. So until
as a hospital,
really
you mean as a hospital?
In the hospital, right?
Right. The hospital wants them coming because they can charge them for a sore throat thousands of dollars.
Right. So exactly, and do two CAT scans. So we have 12 hospitals, and we've come up with a model that will get care a lot closer to home. We've invested about $25 million in it. It's exactly what should be incentivized, and we're getting penalized. And my competitors are saying, hey, I'm glad that Clasco is moving his cases out of his expensive and efficient ER. I make a lot of money by having people come into my expensive ER. So I'll give you the answer.
So I want to go back. I'm sorry, doctor. Let me just back up on this. This idea that if the health, the whole idea behind Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, however you want to describe it, it's all the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea was that that hospitals were getting killed because the people with a sore throat didn't have primary care physicians. They didn't have insurance. Their sore throat would get really critical. They go to the emergency room, and then they couldn't pay anyway because they didn't have insurance and they didn't have anything. And so the hospital could send them bills and bills and bills, but people were just ignoring it. And so the hospitals wanted something that was going to create a safety net for them. And also, and politically, it was a brilliant thing to get out and say, listen, all you people who aren't insured, especially in 2009 when people were losing their jobs after the crash, they're like, this is going to help you. This is a safety net. You're going to have, and then all the other little bells and whistles for the middle class, like kids can stay until they're 27 and all that. So, and people are like, oh, okay, well, what could be possibly so bad?
Everybody gets free ice cream.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
But it's not free.
But it's not free.
At all. The deductibles are high. And I think the other thing to add to that, Roe, is the pre-existing conditions, because those people who had the pre-existing conditions couldn't even get health insurance.
Right.
Who amongst us doesn't know someone who suddenly developed breast cancer and then at a certain point they were no longer insurable?
Right.
This answer was like, you needed something. It was devastating to so many people.
Right. So, I mean, there's the reasons. The reasons for it exist. That all makes sense. But at least it's definable. The real question here now is that the system has now been in place for the last 7 years, or developed and now implemented. It seems to me that we are now we still have people going to the emergency rooms for nothing. As you're pointing out, the millennials, and I blame them for everything, are refusing to get insured, which is like Obama was like, hey, no problem. They're going to do it because I'm cool. They're going to want to do it because I said it's okay.
Right.
Yeah, they love me. It didn't work out.
Saying we'll do anything. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So now what do we do, doctor?
Okay. So let me give you the answer. In 1965, there was a guy named Bill Kissick who talked about an iron triangle of access, quality, and cost. And he said, remember your geometry from ninth grade? If you increase one angle, you got to decrease another.
Okay.
He said, if you ever want to increase access, you either have to decrease quality or increase cost. If you want to increase quality, you have to increase cost or decrease access. Unless you fundamentally disrupt the system. He said in 1965, if anybody ever tries to tell you they're going to increase access, increase quality, and decrease cost without pain. So here's the issue. We need hospitals to close, some hospitals that aren't efficient. We need literally a whole different way that we pay hospitals. We need to really look at what defines a nonprofit hospital versus investor-owned hospital. We have to look at insurance companies differently and their profits. We have to look at pharma differently. And the Affordable Care Act didn't want to do any of that. They wanted it to be the ice cream, literally, and just say, here, we'll free ice cream for everybody, hoping that healthcare would change itself. And here's the one issue with healthcare different than anything else. You take a dollar away from healthcare, it's coming from somebody, right? So the fact is, why do dermatologists make 15 times in Chicago what primary care docs make? That doesn't exist in any other country. We didn't want to deal with that.
I got two words for you on that. Botox. That's why.
why can't Medicare negotiate with pharma, whereas everybody else in the world can negotiate with pharma? I mean, you know the answer to all that, but we're not going to solve this, whether it's the Republicans or the Democrats. And in my book, it's a science fiction book where the Republicans and Democrats actually end up having the same healthcare platform. But whether it's Republicans or Democrats, no. And the first book is called, the first chapter is called 2016, When Politics and Healthcare Became Fun Again. And one of the reviewers said, so you know it's a science fiction book. It doesn't matter who gets in. They're going to be dealing with this mess, as you called it. And until we fundamentally get people together and say, all right, the whole system's got to change. End-of-life care has to change. How we incentivize folks has to change. Primary care doctors versus specialists has to change. And some hospitals are going to close. Let me give you one other absolute, not prediction, but will happen. Joints, you know, joint replacements will be outpatient procedures. There are hospitals in Chicago that 35% of their income is doing joints. Once right. it becomes outpatient procedures, they're going to try to fill those beds with something else. That's got to change.
That's fascinating because as technology is changing, technology is interrupting surgical and all the rest of that with these, what is it, the Da Vinci system, is that what that's called?
Yeah.
That does microsurgery and right. minimally invasive. You could literally touch the heart and the person goes home that afternoon.
Right. But here's the problem with that. You know, so the robot, I lived in Chicago, all along Chicago. You should come to my hospital because we have a robot. But they don't talk about the humans on the other side of the robot. So every community hospital has a robot with doctors that have done 3 or 4. I'm a pilot. Every 2 years, I have to get my technical competence assessed. I'm a surgeon. You want to guess the last time I got my technical competence assessed? Objectively, 30 years ago.
Right. Right. But objective. Right. The lawyers, I'm sure in the meantime, for doctors, not for you, doctor, but for other doctors, lawyers check their competency.
Don't you guys get to do that continuing education in like exotic places and stuff like that? Don't you do that every
year? Well, no. Every year, I have to fill out a multiple choice test. So, Anna, if I operate on you, you know that I have picked up a pencil and not gone too far outside the line.
Uh-oh.
And you can feel really confident that I have the dexterity to pick up a pencil.
Oh, my God.
Dr. Klesko, there's never been a more disruptive time when you look at technology, though. As you point out, it's helping to make it streamline the medical process and create, you know, advancements in that side. But what about on the health insurance exchange side? We saw here in Illinois, Land of Lincoln Health shut down. It was a 3-year-old startup that started up to say, hey, we're going to disrupt healthcare. We're going to prove to be, you know, a great solution for people in Illinois. And they shut down. Isn't that a bad sign about major players?
So let's talk about the insurers for a minute. So the insurers call themselves payers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, think about that. Are they payers? There's only 3 payers in this country: the government, employers, and people. Now, why do they call themselves payers? Because if they called themselves distributors, they'd have to look in the mirror and say, in every other industry, distributors and middlemen have gone away. So at the end of the day, you're right. There are some really good startups that have come and have not made it. But the reason it hasn't made it is because of the inertia of the system. There are so many folks, including the insurers and some hospitals and some doctors, that don't want things to change.
All right, let me ask you.
And they've been able to lobby the Congress.
Doctor, we're going to have to have you back because there's so much here.
I'm getting texts of people saying that Obamacare has helped me too. We should represent that side. My wife had breast cancer and I couldn't have afforded the $1.5 million in treatments, surgeries.
Right. Very well true, but that does not mean that the system isn't collapsing.
That's exactly right.
It's helping people, but the system is collapsing, and what's going to replace it when it completely collapses? That really is the question.
Yeah, and I just want to tell you, Ron, I love the fact that you called it a mess because my new book is going to be a satire children's book called Bless This Mess, a bedtime story of healthcare in America. Your children. Do not read this to your children.
Thank you, doctor. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. Take care.
Dr. Stephen Klesko. You can go to that TED channel and see all his TED Talks. A very fascinating guy. And it's a mess. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have done it. I'm just saying it's a mess. It's got to get fixed. It's not.
Do you need that it's a mess if you have one after another major healthcare provider dropping out or just treating in such a major way?
It's not political. This is reality. What do we do now? Violetta, what do we do now with the traffic?